Hi, readers. Welcome to Books Connect Us from Penguin Random House. This is a podcast about staying connected with each other and the stories and authors who inspire us. Kim Johnson held leadership positions in social justice organizations as a teen. She's now a college administrator who maintains civic engagement throughout the community while also mentoring Black student activists and leaders. Her debut novel, This Is My America, explores racial injustice against innocent Black men who are criminally sentenced and the families left behind to pick up the pieces. Nick Stone, bestselling author of Dear Martin, raves that This Is America is incredible and searing. Now let's join our own Kate Whelan in conversation with author Kim Johnson.
Hi, Kim. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Yeah, I'm so excited to just talk all books, things. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've been having a lot of really great conversations about This Is My America. And just to make sure everybody tuning in knows what this amazing story is about, do you think you could give us a quick description about your book?
Yeah, so This Is My America, it's a young adult book about a 17-year-old girl named Tracy Beaumont, whose father has been wrongfully incarcerated. And he's sentenced to the death penalty. And he basically has his last year in his sentence. And she has been writing letters weekly to Innocence X for trying to free him. And then all of a sudden, something terrible happens. Her brother is suspected of killing a white girl in their community. And Tracy basically goes on a journey to try to free her brother and her father.
Yeah, it's such a pacey thriller, but it's also obviously such a compelling topic, especially right now. But before we dive into all of that great stuff, I did have a couple of questions just to get us rolling. As you know, we're here on Books Connect Us, and I was hoping to check in and see what have you been up to recently that's helped you feel connected or hopeful while we're all in quarantine amidst all of the pandemics.
Yeah, I mean, I am constantly connected to people because of work and family via just online ways that we're doing it now. And for me, you know, I'm so grateful that we're in a time period where we actually can do that, you know, because if we look at, you know, 10 years ago, we wouldn't be able to be connected in that way. You know, when things are really difficult in society and just being under a pandemic, but a lot of sort of the rising questions around race in America and where we want to be as a country, it can get really dark. And for me, that's where I actually find hope, because people are talking about it. And so for me, I'm actually really hopeful because people are talking, people are thinking about new ways of being. And as an educator, for me, that's probably the most exciting point of time in a long time. So, yeah.
Yeah, you've been working in social justice work and in the academic world for quite a time now. Could you share a little bit more about that background?
Yeah, so I have worked in higher ed for about 20 years, all in work that basically supports students, undergraduate students, whether that's direct advising or mentoring or support programs. Right now at my university, I oversee about 5 different advising units, and they all have similar missions, but also very specific missions. And so some of the units that I work with are for low income Pell Grant students on scholarships. The others are just generally looking at career opportunities for them or their first generation students. And the office that I direct, one of the offices that I direct, is actually our diversity office. And so we have retention specialists across all the different underrepresented marginalized identities. And so a lot of the work that I do with students is looking at their experience on a university campus and seeing how we can provide access to them, how we can provide community to them. And, you know, I started writing my book so much because my students are very active. I was an activist growing up, continue to be involved in a lot of different organizations. And, you know, part of that work, I see that really connected to my students, who every year there's a new energy that they come with or a new thing that they're very passionate about and they care about. And so a lot of my work is grounded with young people and what they want their future to be.
That's just such amazing work. And I think I probably speak for your students that they must feel so lucky to have you and a system like that set up to support them. And it really makes me think about the main character in this novel, Tracy. She is an activist in and of herself, doing Know Your Rights workshops, advocating for her father and ultimately her brother as well. Can you tell me how she came about and maybe if she's was sparked by any interactions you've ever had with students or maybe even a young Kim Johnson?
Yeah, she is a young Kim Johnson who breaks into stuff. And I never broke into stuff as a kid.
Good to know.
Yeah, yeah. Although there was this one summer that I did venture around my entire community having fun. But she represents, I think, all the things that I see in my students. They're relentless. They are so determined. They're so creative. They ask why. For a lot of times when you're used to the way that things are, it becomes more and more difficult to want to change, really, because your brain is sort of conditioned to survival mode. You're like, okay, this is what it takes to be a human on this planet in my community. And I think for young people, they're still developing what that world is. And so I wanted Tracy to have all of those sort of the remnants of the students that I know that were doing Black Lives Matter protests and sent demands on our campus, the different student leaders that I've just worked with over the years who started something just from their own energy because they wanted to do it. It also was really important to me to have a woman sort of be at the helm of her story, in particular a Black woman, because we often don't get a chance to see that. And I wanted to really honor the Black Lives Matter movement that was started by three Black women. And so many movements, you have Black women voicing, what's happening or being a part of a solution. And I wanted to have Tracy be a part of that. And then all the other wild stuff that she does that are, really more of the mystery elements of the story. It really goes back. I love mysteries. I love thrillers. I have always watched them as a kid on TV or reading the books, wanted to be an FBI investigator when I was a kid and a lawyer. So she has this sort of really interesting combination of me, of my students, and the students that are out there in the world that I want to pick up and have them feel like, wow, if there's something that I care about, I can actually do something to maybe try to resolve it, or I should care. Like, there's something I can do and I should care about it. So
yeah, I think all of that real world access that you brought to Tracy as a character comes through so clearly. I mean, I'm sitting here as an adult older than this 17-year-old character, looking at her like she's my own heroine. She is doing these incredible things. She has heart and she's smart about it and she's getting the resources that she needs. And it's a really inspiring character to read and see through her eyes how to go about seeking justice for herself and her family. But I also am always interested in hearing you talk about, at the beginning of the Black Lives Matter movement, the women who got it together, and talking about when the Black Lives Matter movement began. And I'm curious, how do you feel the public conversation around race has changed between when you first started writing This Is My America and now in this moment that it's about to go on sale on July 28th?
Yeah, when I first started writing it, it really was a combination of, my educational interests and research that I've done around African-American history, political aspects, sociology, literature. And so I had this really strong foundation. And as more of my students were talking about Black Lives Matter and wanting to talk about, like, what can we do? What can we sort of try to change around police brutality, I started just to see more and more media conversations were very focused on police brutality. And I knew that it was more than that. Like, that was just sort of a sliver of what the issues really were. And there was this larger criminal justice issue that was there. And so I really wrote it for wanting to expand the narrative around our criminal justice system, so that it's not just about if you see video footage of someone doing something brutal, to someone who's African American, that it's even more than that, that there's a system behind it, and there's a reason of that system. And I felt like, you know, I was talking with college students and they were just learning and they're like, why didn't I know this before? Like, I never knew that our, you know, entire criminal justice system and our structure of having police was set from, you know, post-slavery, where there's patrol officers who were created because there was such a fear amongst white people that now that slaves were free, that they would basically seek revenge, and they wanted to use that system. And so that's really where it started, because I was getting really frustrated that, you know, it was like a one issue thing. And that's sort of how I've been feeling over our past, you know, really 5 years, is that the country has sort of been focused on one issue, and then another issue comes, and so then we're focused on that issue, and we actually don't see how it's threaded. Now the conversation has totally opened up. I couldn't have even actually imagined that all the conversations that we're having now would even be out there when my book was coming out. And so when I thought my book was going to come out, I thought it might open up people to think about these other issues, and now people are already thinking about, you know, bail systems, and more people are talking about innocence cases. More people are talking about, you know, disproportionate sentencing. More people are talking about our actual, like, should we actually invest in communities and defund the police, so that we actually are looking at supporting mental health and other kinds of things. So I would have never imagined us being in this sort of, you know, state. The conversation is so different. And I think that's when you're going back to thinking about being hopeful, is because when I wrote it, I was hoping it might be something that would start a conversation. Now I feel like it's going to be part of a movement, you know, it's going to be part of that larger look at anti-racist readings, ways that we can resolve stuff. I think it can be really tangible in schools and with young people, and, you know, even a lot of older readers who are picking it up and finding the humanity in the whole story about Tracy and her family. So, it's really amazing to see the change in the time period from when I started to now when the book's coming out.
That's something I've had on my mind as a reader. I read this book back in the beginning of 2020, and I loved it. And I think I had a lot of those experiences you speak about, maybe your students being like, how come I didn't understand the extent of these issues? And how come I hadn't had a chance to really sit down and think about the implications for real world people and families and what all of this means? So I think you're exactly right that this book that may have started conversations is now so perfectly poised to be at the center of the conversation. And it's such a powerful thing. And one of the reasons it's so powerful is the intention you put behind your characters. We've talked a little bit about Tracy, but I know with your other characters, her friends, her family, people in her community, you wrote those experiences in very intentionally to show other layers of this problem and other layers of these communities. Could you speak about some of those characters and why you put their stories in the novel?
Yeah, I wanted to have a lot of different juxtapositions so that a reader could not only just be in Tracy's sort of head, right, as a reading, but they could see the sort of similar paths that people could be on that could change basically at, like, you know, an instant. And Tasha is a best friend of Tracy in this story, and her life is similar than with Tracy in that her father has spent time inside in prison, and he had been released, and he went back because of an incident that happened, and so he had to spend a little bit more time, and then he finally was home. And you sort of see this you know, tension between Tracy, who wants her father, she knows her father is innocent, she wants her father home, and Tasha, who on the surface is upset at her father. She doesn't want to even connect to her father. But if you were to sort of dig deeper and think about it, it's because she's afraid that her father is going to leave her again. And I wanted that sort of that sense about there's families that are impacted, you know, and we don't talk about it. There's a huge juxtaposition that I also wanted to play in thinking about, using the death penalty as a lens for people to begin to think about the larger question about our criminal justice system. So for me, the death penalty is sort of the most extreme level of our criminal justice system, and thinking about something so serious to that you actually are saying that this person is guilty and will be sentenced to death. And, you know, it's a very controversial topic about the death penalty. And I don't necessarily get into whether the death penalty is right or wrong, because I think when you start to engage in that conversation, then you lose a lot of readers. What I really wanted to sort of center the story on is that if you have an innocent person who actually didn't do what they said, they should have the best kind of representation. They should have the best investigative, you know, platform. You should make sure that there's no bias in the jury before you would even think about putting a death sentence on someone. And the fact that 1 in 9 cases of those that are on the death penalty, they suspect is actually an innocent person. You know, that's a fact from some of the research from police, prison initiatives, equal justice initiatives, and research that they have. And for me, that was sort of to put a pin in, if we could actually get this wrong, how many other kinds of cases that actually don't deal with murder or where death penalty is on the line, that, you know, you could actually have botched investigations, or you could actually have someone, you know, be over sentenced for either something they did, but it's over sentenced because of race or not. And I really wanted to play around with the entire cycle of a prison system, from the beginning where Jamal is a suspect all the way to James Beaumont, who's the father in the story. And another pieces that I sort of play around with that is just her relationships with her friends that are in her circle. So Dean, he's a white friend of hers who, you know, is cares a lot for Tracy, you know, thinks that he is really aware of, you know, diversity and his relationship. But there's, you know, a lot of moments where he isn't quite sure about certain scenarios that happen, and he starts to really unpack that it's because of race, or even thinking about his own role. And to me, that's for the readers who want to be anti-racist. I want them to see themselves in that, you, when you have relationships with people, that if you want to be in community with them, if you want to be in close proximity with them, that you really have to also be anti-racist too. And so, you know, I play around a lot with that in looking at different characters and different scenarios where their life could change at any moment, in hopes that a reader can basically see the human condition in our society and want to care about them. So,
yeah, and seeing the human condition in such a real world comparison, like as you were saying, the statistics about 1 in 9 being exonerated, I think I learned from you in some of your writing that about 95% of prosecutors in the U.S. are white. I believe that's as of 2014. And understanding those facts, and again, how, if that's what's going on with the death penalty, its implications for our communities and for Black communities in particular, who are experiencing the brunt of this injustice, what happens to them, and how it's such a comparison between the real world and this book. It's so meaty and so well, wonderfully done. Not to fangirl too much, but it is all just so smart, and I love hearing you talk about it, because it just goes to show how important your voice as a debut author who has done this work is to talking about all of these problems. And having authors like you and characters like Tracy on the cover of books is just the most wonderful thing, and could not be more grateful to have that moment to share with you. But one thing that's also really amazing about your book is it's for young adult readers, and it's a mystery. And I was hoping you could talk a little bit about why you wanted to write for YA, and perhaps why a mystery felt like the right fit for Tracy's story.
Yeah, there's so many different reasons. I think the first one is, when I was in high school as a teen, I stopped reading. I was always an avid reader. I loved to read. I loved just the process of storytelling in my head, and breaking down plots. And I lost all interest because I didn't have that representation. So it was boring to me. It just didn't feel like it was connected. It was about other people living their life. And I've always been, you know, empathetic. I've been able to pick up those things, but I just really lost a lot of interest. And so working on a college campus, being around a lot of young people when, you know, 10 years ago, when young adult really started picking up as a, I don't want to say it's a franchise, but like you could start to see young adult, a big moment. There was lots of movies as a franchise that sort of came out with young adult, but it was really, you know, as a sort of like category area really started to pick up. And then I just started to start reading again. And I just fell in love with that coming of age moment. And it's just, it for me, it's so connected to why I love working with young people. I work with a lot of undeclared students who like come into college and they don't know what to do. And sometimes they have no idea. And they only know of like a few majors, you know, like lawyer, doctor, teacher. and then like seeing them, you know, a year later, 2 years later, where they're in their own and they're involved and they're, you know, they're passionate about something and they've sort of figured that piece out. I love those moments. And I think with me, I connect so much with YA because they're on a journey. They're on a journey as a young person who is getting their own areas of responsibility, not fully responsible, although sometimes that is the case. And are just trying to figure things out about who they want to be in this world. And so much of what I write about, I feel like I just connect so much, with young readers. And I think, you know, for adult readers who read YA, like myself, I think one of the things that I really enjoy about writing young adult is because again, we get to be so fixed. We think about what's realistic, what's not realistic. It's really hard for your sort of imagination to expand unless you sort of put yourself in the position of a young person to and think like, yeah, you know, that there aren't these other worries that they have, these that they have these different kind of worries, and that the way that they navigate the world won't be different. And so the reason why I wanted to use mystery, sort of those mystery elements, is just because I love, that's what I read. Like that's what I read. I read so much young adult mysteries and adult mysteries too. But, you know, I love it so much. I love those moments where you're sort of, your heart drops or you get to the last sentence in a chapter and you're ready to go to bed. And then that last sentence is there and you're like, oh my God, I got to find out what happened.
What just happened?
And I love, for me, that's how you hook a young reader to want to read young adult, is how do you keep them excited and engaged, interested, where they want to know more. And so, you know, sometimes with this work and you write about work that are on either ethical dilemmas or social justice issues, people, you know, they kind of opt out, you know, where they're like, this book isn't for me, or I'm not ready to read this very sort of, you know, serious book. I don't know if, you know, my heart can take it, or, you know, if I want to, like, you know, basically own up to maybe what their responsibility might be in society to read these books. And so I really wanted to use the mystery element as a way to, immediately when you jump into a mystery, there's something wrong that's happened. And young people are so much about right and wrong and wanting to figure it out. And that mystery element component, I think, just sort of like grips you as a reader, where you immediately care about righting that wrong. And oh my goodness, is this main character going to figure it out? And I thought that if I could hook a reader in that way, then all these sort of other elements about, you know, racial injustice and our criminal justice system and navigating a Black community, living in a white community, that then they will be immersed in a world that I think often as readers who are not Black reading books that are about Black people, for whatever kind of story it is, sometimes they don't sort of fully immerse themselves in the story, and they sort of see it as a sort of this very different thing. So yeah, that was sort of my pulling and plotting and thinking about it. So
yeah, I think to speak more on what you were saying about young adult readers, that coming of age is such a beautiful thing. And I think it's part of why young adult has had such a big moment the past couple of years, the past decade, is because, you know, if you're an adult reader, you've gone through a coming of age moment. You have had an experience where you confronted the big, scary world and all of the things it was throwing at you and had to make decisions about what was right and wrong. And so I think that's why young adult can feel like such a perfect read for so many people, even if you're not a young adult yourself, even though we're all obviously very young at heart. But, you know, one question I've always wanted to ask you, and I don't think I've had the chance, and it's a little silly, but if you could have a safe, socially distanced, no coronavirus concern dinner with any mystery writer in the world, who would that person be?
Oh my gosh. It would have to be a table of people, to be honest.
A whole dinner party.
I have been really, really interested in the work of Attica Locke. And I think the reason why I like her writing is because she also does film, and I'm a very visual person. And so I would be just very, you know, interested in, she's someone who's like, contemporary right now, you know, writing some great crime writing. But, you know, I think, you know, Walter Dean Myers, classic, with some of the work that he's done. I love, E.G. Lockhart. I do. I really love her work. Like, she'd be someone who I think would be really just great, 'cause she can be so twisty with some of her stuff. Yeah, there's so many different, just great, you know, mystery writers that are from the past and the, you know, the current sort of contemporary setting that, I'd love, and I take so much, like I even take so much from, I'm so bad with like writer's names. I should just have the stack like right in front of me, but, Saint Simone. So I'm so bad with her name. She's written some work that has just really taken me a lot, that I just love because it has some of those ghosts. Like I love, mystery stories that have this sort of like unnatural, supernatural,
paranormal.
Yeah, but are very light, because I'm so grounded in the real world. Like I'm so contemporary. I think the only thing that like I can really connect to is like if there's a magic involved or if there's ghosts, because I actually believe that stuff. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
I do.
Because that is real world. What are you talking about?
That's so very for real. Me, that is actually still very like I believe in that kind of stuff. So for me it can be grounded in that reality. And so I would love to like kind of connect with those writers. But I should keep my like stack right in front of me because I'm terrible with names. So
names are always the hardest one to remember, but nobody's going to forget Kim Johnson, the author of This Is My America, ladies and gentlemen. We're getting close to time, but I do have three more questions I'm hoping to go over with you. And the first one being, you know, we've talked a lot about the young readers out there. We've talked a lot about your students. We've talked a lot about these fantastic characters. But as a writer and a professional with all this experience, do you have any advice for teens who are either taking part in activism or who want to become writers themselves?
Yeah, I think with activism, that can happen at any moment. And, you know, I think when people think about activism, they think immediately of protesting. And that's one of many ways that you actually can do it. You know, your activism can actually be sitting in a classroom and being brave enough that if someone says something that's, you know, harmful, you know, homophobic or racist or sexist or ableist, that they can actually be powerful in using their voice. They can create their own club at their school. They can write a letter to the principal. They can write a letter to the school district. There's lots of different ways. I think if people are very interested in the anti-racist movement right now and looking at criminal justice issues, especially around Black Lives Matter, there's so many organizations that in your community as a young person that actually have been involved in that work. And so if you're new to that work, I think it's just so powerful to connect with your community, because, you know, you can see what's happening nationally. And I think it's really important to help with what's happening nationally. But then also, how can you be in community? And I'm a community person or community, you know, organizer. So I love people working within their community. And, you know, they have things where it's like they have meetings or they have their Zoom calls that things are happening. And then they tell you about, you know, a judge who might be up for election that we actually want to support someone else because we look at that person's record. You know, we don't want to, you know, vote for that person. How can they do that? Voter advocacy. This is a huge election this coming year. We don't know what it's going to look like. The coronavirus is out there. It's still going to be out there in November, no matter what, you know, other, you know, politicians might be telling you. It's out there. And as a young people, they could help people in their community who are going to have a difficult time thinking about how are they going to actually get to vote. So if they're a state that doesn't allow voter registration, how can you try to maybe get that on the ballot for the next year? And as a writer, I started writing at 32. No one told me I could write. Like, I never thought that I could write. I thought I was a horrible writer. I thought I didn't know anything about grammar. I don't, but I, you know, but I thought that that could actually be a hindrance to me writing. And you know, as young people, you get these messages from people telling you about what you can and can't do, whether they're explicitly told or the way it makes you feel. And you know, I think that there's power within you trying something that you've never tried before. And I've always been that kind of person. And that's what I encourage young people to do is that, you know, writing isn't just about being able to put the story down. It's about using your imagination and your creativity. And if it takes you longer to actually become, you know, a stronger writer, that doesn't mean that you can't be a writer.
Those are all great pieces of advice. And I love both of them because they also give listeners so many options of which piece is going to work the best for them. So once again, Kim Johnson coming in hot with all the best advice. So like I said, I have two more quick questions. One is just what have you been reading either recently, what's on your TBR right now?
I am reading so many debut books. They're coming out of my ears. So I'll just go through them really quickly. A recent debut, I loved her book, was Leah Johnson's You Should See Me in a Crown, a queer contemporary story about a Black girl who wants to be prom queen. Such, I love that story so much. I'm about to dip into A Song of Wraith and Runes by Rosie Brown, and I have never been a very big avid fantasy reader, and I'm just starting to fall in love with all these stories with these, you know, Black protagonists at hand. So I'm so excited about that. I read a really amazing dystopian by Kelly McWilliams, which is Agnes at the End of the World. And that was a nice little like escape for me. And then right now I'm in the middle of reading Black Kids by Christina Hammonds Reed. I'm just starting that. That's coming out a little after my book comes out. And then Legend Born by Tracy Dion. I'm super excited about that because it has the magic that I like in the that I like to talk about. But I'm reading a ton. Alex Richards' Accidental was a really beautiful book. Earlier books that I read this fall that I loved was Liz Lawson's The Lucky One. Sorry, my brain's escaped. That was such a beautiful book. I loved it so much. A hard book, I think, but I think she did such a phenomenal job on that. And then once I get done with these debuts, I'm hoping in August that I can jump into Rory Powers' Burning the Bodies Down. So that's the one that I'm looking forward to jumping into. So there's like 10 more that I seriously are like in my Kindle or like by my bedside. I don't even know how I'm going to do it, but.
You are a true book nerd with the massive TBR list on the bedside. I'm a huge fan of that. So
it's disgusting, actually. It's so bad.
No, it's not. No, readers out there. there. Everybody, you should have massive bookless next to you.
You should, but if you actually literally fall out of your bed sometimes because you trip over your books, that is a bad thing.
Yeah, some shelving may be necessary, but all things to be figured out.
Yeah, more shelving.
You could DIY your own bookshelf while we're in quarantine, Kim. Like, maybe that's what's next.
Yes, it is.
So my very last question for you, as we've been talking about connection a lot today, is just how can readers out there connect with you online these days?
Yeah, so I'm at KC Johnson Writes on Instagram, on Twitter, and on my website. So, and I'm active on all those platforms, although I shouldn't
be. That's great.
But I am.
Yes. Oh, I love it. I follow you, Kim, and I love it. I'm there. I'm liking everything, retweeting everything. So was there anything else you wanted to share today on Books Connect Us?
No, I'm so excited to talk books with you, my books, and how it connects to young people and activism and overall just how to be a better human. So...
Absolutely. And I can't thank you enough for being here with us today, for writing this novel and putting this story out in the world for all of our readers. And just thank you so much for everything. It's been great talking with you.
All right. Thank you.
And now, here's an exclusive excerpt from the audiobook, courtesy of Penguin Random House Audio.
Time runs my life, a constant measuring of what's gone and what's to come. Jamal's 100-meter dash is a blazing 10.06 seconds. That's how my older brother got this monumental interview. I'm not thinking about Jamal's record, though. I'm thinking about Daddy's time. 7 years. 2,532 days served, to be exact. This running clock above my head's been in place since his conviction. That moment branded me. Mama gripped the courtroom bench to keep from collapsing as each juror repeated, guilty. I looked to Mama for an explanation. The empty look in her eye cried out the answer. Death. Since then, it's tick-tock. Here at the TV station, Jamal rocks steadily in the guest chair, watching highlights of his track career with a producer during a commercial break. He glides his hands over his fresh barber cut, his mind more likely on the camera angles that'll best show his waves. We're true opposites, despite our 1 year difference. He's patient, calm, thinking, living, loving. He's everything on the outside I wish to be, bringing people in when 9 out of 10, I'd rather push them out. That's why I hate that my mission crosses paths with the biggest day of Jamal's life. 5 minutes and 37 seconds until showtime. As the commercial nears its end, I don't have to look up to know Mama's leaving the makeup room. The click of her heels echoes past a crew of engineers and radiates as she circles around Jamal to the guest seating area on the side of the studio stage. She enters like only a proud black mother can. Hair all pressed and curled, with a sharp black skirt suit that fits her curvy figure. Mama's been name-dropping everywhere she can about the news anchor Susan Turek showcasing Jamal as a top athlete. I expected a live audience, but the set is a small studio and crew. I look out to Susan Turek's interview desk with a backdrop image of Austin, the state capital. They've pulled out a white couch so there's space for my family to join Jamal at the end. Mama smiles at Jamal, then at my little sister Corinne, but I swear she throws some silent shade my way. Her not-so-subtle warnings have been going on for the past month. She knows I want Daddy's story to seep out, but Mama has made clear there is no room for Daddy on this occasion. Not because she don't love Daddy, but because she wants Jamal to have a clean slate at college as Jamal. Not Jamal, the son of a murderer. If it was a few years ago, I'd understand. But Daddy's got less than a year. No extensions. No money for more appeals. While time uncoils itself from Daddy's lifeline, she's forbidden Susan Turek from mentioning him too. The show agreed not to talk about Daddy in exchange for Jamal showing up. And if Susan tries anything, Mama says we'll straight up leave. Mama stands by me and leans near my ear. Tracy, ain't it something to see your big brother's hard work paying off? Mm-hmm, I say, even though I'm still hoping the journalist in Susan can't help but fling open Pandora's box on live television. Mama won't be able to stop it then. Then our truth can breathe free. The fight for Daddy's appeal won't be in vain. People will finally hear the truth. Wake up to the fact that Lady Liberty has failed us. Failed so many others.
Thank you for listening to Books Connect Us. For more great book recommendations and information about your favorite authors, feel free to follow Penguin Random House on social media or visit penguinrandomhouse.com. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard, go ahead and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, as it helps more listeners to find our show. This podcast is produced by Pat Stango and edited by Clayton Gumbert. I've been Erin Leaf, and until next time, this has been Books Connect Us.